Welcome to the Beacon Podcast by ThoughtWorks. Today's episode explores evolutionary architecture. Let's get started.
Hello, my name is Neil Ford. I'm a director, software architect, and meme wrangler at ThoughtWorks. And today I'm with Rebecca Parsons.
And I'm Rebecca Parsons, Chief Technology Officer for ThoughtWorks and Geek Wrangler.
And we are together with our colleague Pat Kwa writing a book about the subject of evolutionary architectures in software. And today we're going to talk about one particular aspect of our definition of evolutionary architectures. So here's our working definition right now. Evolutionary architectures support incremental guided change as a first principle across multiple dimensions. That's our working definition for evolutionary architecture. And we've talked about some of the aspects of that definition on other podcasts. Today, we're going to focus on the guided part of our definition, and in particular, this idea around fitness functions.
And when we talk about a fitness function, this is really our way of characterizing about an architecture or about a system, what we want out of that architecture. So when we talk about software design, you very often hear the phrase emergent design. And we're not talking about emergent architecture, we're talking about evolutionary architecture. And that guided aspect is why is where we get the connection for guided and evolutionary. That there is in fact something other than just ad hoc change that is being talked about here. We are looking instead at how we move a system, how we move an architecture towards a particular goal. And so this is notion of evolutionary change. If you think about evolutionary computation, something like a genetic algorithm, you have an explicit fitness function. And this fitness function is what you were trying to achieve, what you were trying to find the solution that optimizes against this fitness function. And that's where we get this notion of evolutionary change as opposed to emergent change.
In fact, if you're trying to build evolvability as one of the standard supported illities in architecture, you have to think about these multiple dimensions and how they change over time. And fitness functions is a way to look at a particular dimension and decide, I want to protect the characteristics of this dimension as it evolves over time. So it allows freedom of evolution, but also constraints so that it doesn't evolve in an undesirable way or start breaking something. And the standard kind of architectural illities fit into this category, like scalability and reliability, and we want to add evolvability to that by using this idea of fitness functions. We've identified two different kinds of fitness functions, atomic fitness functions and holistic fitness functions. Atomic fitness functions can run against a single context, like a single application or a single web context, for example, something that's well-defined and well-bounded, and you can get a singular result by running it in something like a deployment pipeline. But very often, systems are more complex, and they have complex interactions, and so holistic fitness functions are ones that you need to run within a specific larger context where multiple systems are interacting in interesting ways.
Thinking about this from the perspective of optimization is often useful. And you can think of sometimes these atomic fitness functions as just a single variable optimization. I want to find the maximum of something. But when we start to talk about these holistic fitness functions, and in fact when we think about the complex interactions between various aspects of architecture, this is much more like a multivariate optimization where you can't actually optimize or maximize across all variables because there are trade-offs. You might have to trade off speed for security because if you have to encrypt something, it takes more time than if you don't encrypt. And so you have to say, what are the trade-offs? And this is where we get to the specification of the fitness function. And this is something that very early on in thinking about a system, in thinking about an organization, we have to define what's most important to us. And this is where we start to be able to think about how do I not only look at these holistic versus atomic fitness functions, but then how do these things roll up together? What is my relative importance of scalability versus reliability versus data protection versus even evolvability? Because we do want to focus this are thinking that Illides, across the Illides, that evolvability is one of these things that we might want to think about. Now, we might not care. The system itself might be simple enough that for one aspect of our architecture, we can in fact say, I don't care if I can change that thing as that particular part of the system, because it's small enough that if I need to change it, I'll just redo it. So where we see that manifested is in the weight that we put on these different dimensions and how we think about these fitness functions. So one of these early architectural activities is in fact the specification of these various fitness functions. And these fitness functions take many different forms. Some of them might be static analysis. You might want to use some kind of code analysis tools that look at various dependencies across different aspects of the system, and you might put that into your build. Or you might say that we need to have this particular response time for different queries to a database. So, you know, some of these are static, some of these are actually run in a build. Some of these you might have to look at in a very different way. When we start to think about what is the recovery time for a system, which might be one of our fitness functions that we need to be able to recover from a database crash in X period of time. Well, trying to actually automate that test and stick that in a build is potentially problematic. We might also have some tests that are in fact not even able to be automated. But just like in the rest of Agile software development, we want to have unambiguous, objective success criteria. You need to be able to say that this test passed. You can't just say the system needs to be fast. Define fast. We need to have something that actually specifies what is required or not. And that's a critical part of fitness functions, is that these things are measurable and objective, even if you can't automate them. Obviously, that's our preference. But some of these things you just can't automate.
Yeah, like legal requirements would be a good fitness function, because as you evolve your architecture, you don't want to suddenly start violating legal requirements. And so that would be a good example of a manual fitness function that you would need to apply. But the way to think about fitness functions is really like guide rails for your architecture, because there are certain things that you really want your architecture to evolve in ways that make most sense to the business and as your business evolves. But there are certain things you don't want to change or break, and you put guide rails in place. And like Rebecca said, you very often identify a lot of these things at the first of a project, because things like security or cross-cutting concerns across the entire architecture, they have to worry about if we're evolving the architecture, we're not opening up security holes and things like that. But you'll also identify these things along the way as well. This is still very much an agile process. And so as you're working in your architecture, you'll notice it start exhibiting some sort of odd behavior. And having this fitness function mechanism in place gives you a ready mechanism that you can say, oh, this is starting to do something that I don't want, performance is slowing down, or our data is getting stale, and that's starting to open us up for some issues. Then you can retrofit a fitness function into the application. So this is expected to be a living part of architecture and systems as they try to evolve over time.
And this guardrail analogy is an interesting one, because very often when you look at architecture groups in enterprises, you have a very small number of architects relative to the number of developers and the number of development projects that are going on in enterprises. And as a result, you often get this very heavy-handed thou shalt attitude, in part because there's no other mechanism for a small number of people to actually be able to dictate how all of these different development projects are going to proceed. And by specifying these fitness functions, you do give guardrails to these individual teams to empower them to make the kinds of decisions that make the most sense in their context while respecting the needs of the broader organization and these architectural requirements that is really the responsibility of an enterprise architect. They have the responsibility for all of those different systems, but they can't be involved in every individual design decision or architecture, even architectural decision that is made across these teams. And by putting these fitness functions in, you give the teams the specification of what the architecture has to satisfy, not how it's going to satisfy it. And so this gives us a mechanism to allow many different teams to work at speed while still maintaining the characteristics of the architecture that are important from the enterprise level. So one critical principle of evolutionary architecture is this principle of the last responsible moment. I always prefer to call it the latest responsible moment, but accepted term in the industry is last responsible moment. And this is the idea that what we're going to do is delay decisions about architecture as long as possible, as long as responsible, but no longer. And very often we're asked, well, how do I know what the last responsible moment is? And that's what this composite fitness function helps you understand, because what is specified there are the things that matter the most in an architecture. And the things that matter the most in the architecture will tend to have the broadest impact on how you develop a system, how you make decisions. So if you don't have to worry too much about scalability, then there are things that you're just not going to think about. You might be much more concerned about data security, and so you're going to put a lot of attention around what is happening to data at rest, what kind of encryption algorithms am I using, how am I managing encryption keys, etc. And not think so much about what is the particular performance if that's not a major requirement for that system. And so by understanding what are the critical requirements, you can extrapolate from that on what are the decisions that are going to have the greatest impact on how I approach developing a particular system, how I approach the selection of a particular piece of technology. Because we're not just talking here about technical architecture, we're talking about application architecture, data architecture, security, all of those different aspects of a system need to be wrapped up into this overall fitness function that we have for our architecture.
But that's a really nice thing, because it unifies all these non-functional requirements that kind of lay around on projects, and they're kind of verified ad hocly sometimes because they're hard to verify, but there's no kind of unifying framework that says these are all part of the same thing. This allows you to define all those kinds of nebulous things as fitness functions and start doing an apples-to-apples comparison, so you can, in fact, start thinking about budgeting and prioritization and resources and other sorts of things, which are really tricky now because it's really hard. So what's more important is speed of data or security? And now you're arguing across silos. Unifying those to fitness functions gives you an idea of exactly how to compare those things and think about them much more strategically, which is really vitally important, we think, because the rate of change in architecture is not, and in the software development ecosystem and the way we build architectures is not going to slow down. We talk about in the book this dynamic equilibrium of the software development ecosystem, that new things can hit it at any time and change the foundation by which you make decisions about how to make changes in your architecture. And so if you can no longer predict how things are going to change, the next best thing to do is to build evolvability into the architecture, to be able to react to change when it happens rather than getting stressed about trying to predict it. And that's exactly what evolutionary architecture allows you to do, and specifically this idea of fitness functions as protections around dimensions as they evolve over time.
And it's important to focus on this word evolvability, because often when we think about something like adaptability, the idea that is conjured up is, oh, I've got something that's flexible enough that I have all the right knobs to turn and all the right levers to pull, because somehow I was smart enough to figure out in advance how all of these things were going to change, so I have the right knobs and levers. That just can't happen anymore. Maybe it could happen 30 or 40 years ago, but the requirements that systems live in now, and not just in technological change, but expectations from users, the business, fundamental business model lifetimes are even shrinking. And so rather than thinking that we have a prayer of being able to predict how these things are going to change so I can build in the right knobs and levers, we need to make sure instead that we can make some of these fundamental changes safely and quickly. And that's why we're focusing on this phrase evolvability as opposed to adaptability. So we've been talking quite a bit about how it is that we understand what we want our architecture to achieve, how we want our architecture to evolve. And so if we go back to our definition, evolutionary architecture supports incremental and guided change across, as a first principle across multiple dimensions. And we use this fitness function as a way of characterizing for us how we are guiding this system. What is our objective? What is our North Star that we want our architecture to evolve towards? And that's what we mean when we say guided.
Thanks for listening to the Beacon podcast by Thoughtworks. Subscribe to hear more episodes and stay informed.